I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. If you're in the medical marijuana business in California, you can carefully abide by every state regulation and still risk federal prosecution. That's because cannabis is an illegal drug in the United States. But certain uses are perfectly legal in California and 15 other states. Just about a year ago, the industry was experiencing a boom, expanding the legal business of medical marijuana. It's what one of our guests calls the marijuana gold rush. And then last fall, federal prosecutors cracked down on what they say are commercial operations that violate federal law. United States attorneys charge that dispensaries are too close to schools and that many are actually criminal operations. So now medical pot clubs are working in a gray area. And some say the federal crackdown is pushing growers underground. Just last month, the oldest medical marijuana dispensary in California, the Marin Alliance in Fairfax, was evicted as part of this nationwide crackdown. Oakland's Harborside Health faces back taxes of $2.5 million. Mendocino operations were raided and confiscated. So how are pot clubs and licensed growers negotiating the laws and economics of this semi-legal trade? And what do you think the future of the marijuana industry should look like? What regulation makes sense? Does control belong with people on the local level, or should there be federal standards? Joining us today to talk about this, we have Mark Schaefer in studio. He's the director of the National Geographic documentary Marijuana Gold Rush about the growth of the medical marijuana industry. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Holly.
And by phone, we've got Joe Elford. He's chief counsel with Americans for Safe Access. That's a national membership organization of patients, medical professionals, scientists, and concerned citizens promoting safe and legal access to cannabis for therapeutic use and research. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Holly.
So let me ask both of you, and let me start maybe with you, Mark. There is this gray area now with this big federal crackdown, and State Attorney General Kamala Harris has said that California's regulations about medical marijuana are vague and chaotic. I'm wondering if that's a big part of what's happening now with this federal crackdown, that the law, the 1996 law, just wasn't very well written. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yes, that's the case. The law is vague, and it's created a situation of confusion across the state where you have parts of California where you have giant commercial operations selling medical marijuana or growing medical marijuana, other parts of the state where there are very severe restrictions placed on it. The federal prosecutors have said that the commercial operations that they are targeting, the larger dispensaries, fall outside the law. That's what they've said is their justification for shutting them down. Early in the Obama administration, I'm sure Joe can address this, there was a memo issued, a so-called Ogden memo, that said that the administration was prepared to follow local or state medical marijuana laws. And that created the appearance of a real opportunity, an opening, into which stepped a lot of entrepreneurs and others who built a really very public, very active marijuana industry. And this has been a reaction to that we've seen starting last fall.
And that's what you really profile in Marijuana Gold Rush. Well, Joe, you know, what some people are saying is that the way that the industry was growing and evolving, like what Mark profiles in Marijuana Gold Rush, wasn't really the intent of California voters when they passed Prop 215, allowing medicinal use of weed.
Well, there's what the voters passed in 1996, but then there's also what the legislature passed in 2003. And so when you see these dispensaries are modeled after the law that was passed in 2003, which is at least an attempt to implement the will of the California electorate when they passed their law in 1996. I mean, these seriously old people have to get their medicine from somewhere. It's unrealistic in many cases to expect them to grow their own. And so just like if they were to buy any other medicine, they would go to a dispensary and buy their medicine from the dispensary.
And can I ask you, Joe, you know, marijuana has been illegal under federal law for more than 70 years. What prompted the government to make pot illegal in the first place?
Well, the person behind, the evil genius behind the whole thing is a gentleman named Harry J. Anslinger, who stated that marijuana causes insanity, criminality, and death. None of which is true, and that's what the American Medical Association said at the time Nonetheless, in 1937, Congress, at Mr. Anslinger's behest, passed the Marijuana Tax Act. Then in 1970, you've got the War on Drugs and the Controlled Substances Act was passed, which really ratcheted up the penalties on marijuana use, and that's where we stand today.
And let's talk a little bit about your documentary, Marijuana Gold Rush, Mark Schaefer. It profiles this booming business of making money specifically from growing, selling, distributing medical marijuana in these 15 states plus D.C., where it's legal to varying degrees. And people were really open with talking with you about this. There seemed to be this sense that this is going legit and Wall Street investors wanted to get in on it. Tell us a little bit about what stood out to you the most about how the industry was growing in 2010, 2011.
Just that. When I started the research, I grew up in Berkeley. I came of age in the 1970s when marijuana use was very widespread. I live in Oakland now. And I really had no idea that this industry existed in the way it did. I saw on the back pages of my free weeklies lots of advertisements for marijuana-related cards.
How to get a pot cup.
Yes, exactly, all that stuff. But I never really understood what was going on. And my assumption going into making the film was that I was going to have a very hard time finding people to speak to me on camera, show their face. And in fact, if you look at a lot of marijuana films, what you see is a lot of people interviewed from the neck down or with their faces blurred out or these kinds of things prior to the last year or two. And as I began digging into this, what I found was the opposite. I found people lining up to show me their pot operations, to walk me around their farms, to show me their dispensaries. And that, to me, was the story, that there appeared to be, to me, a complete lack of fear, that this was a genuinely legal operation going on. And I was stunned to discover that. And I felt that once I began there and started digging into it, the business side of the story really begged to be told, that what was going on in a bad economy, in a country in which the economy isn't serving the middle class very well, certainly the working class, this industry was growing and people were being drawn to it. And it was largely unrelated to anything having to do with medical care. It was a business story dressed up as a marijuana.
And who were the people getting into this business?
Well, it was all types. There was a range, and that was interesting to me. You have the old school marijuana advocacy types who saw this as a natural extension of what they'd already always been about, right, which was getting marijuana out there. You had all the way over to the other side, a guy like Derek Peterson, who is a former vice president at a Wall Street investment firm, a very prominent blue chip Wall Street investment firm, who left Wall Street to become a marijuana capitalist, a ganjapreneur, right, with his then partner, Dar Mann. So you had a range of people whose motives for getting into this industry were not always aligned and really, in some respects, were directly in conflict with one another.
Let's hear from one of the people that you actually profiled in your documentary, and he's local. Steve DeAngelo is the owner of Harborside Health Center in Oakland. And let's hear what he's got to say.
Under federal sentencing guidelines, I qualify for the death sentence several times over because of the number of cannabis plants that we've sold here. I never know for sure when I come to work in the morning whether I'm coming home at the end of the day or whether there's going to be a raid and I'll end up in prison. The reason that I do it is because I love this plant. I have created Harborside Health Center to achieve social goals, to demonstrate that we can distribute cannabis in a way that brings benefits to communities and not harms.
And that's Steve DeAngelo. He's the owner of Harborside Health Center in Oakland. It's about $22 million operation a year. And the IRS has said that Harborside is a criminal drug trafficking organization and cannot deduct rent, salaries, and other business expenses. And they've levied a $2.5 million back taxes, saying this is not a nonprofit. So can you tell us kind of a little bit about what's happened with Harborside?
Yeah, sure, just that. I mean, Joe probably understands this law backwards and forwards, but the irony here is that Harborside is I have to laugh. A lot of this is funny. Harborside is allowed to deduct the expenses it spends on actually purchasing the marijuana. That's a legitimate business expense. The other stuff is not. I don't know. Joe can explain that, perhaps, or an IRS attorney.
Joe, do you want to step in here? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe they can subtract the cost of goods sold, which is exactly the problem. They can't subtract the cost of the marijuana that they purchase.
And I don't know. Andrew told me they could, his general manager.
It's possible he's right and I'm wrong, but my understanding of the way it works, at least typically under the IRS, is that you can't subtract that expense. You can't subtract basic things like rent and other overhead expenses. So they're put in a predicament that no other business would be put in. It's not because of their nonprofit status. It's because what they're doing is illegal under federal law. And because it's illegal under federal law, you're prohibited from taking all sorts of deductions that any regular business would be able to take.
And it stems from a law that was passed in the 1980s directed at drug traffickers. There was a case where a drug trafficker was arrested and he deducted his business expenses related to his cocaine trafficking. And so they passed this law specifically to forbid such a thing. And that's the law that was applied to Harborside.
And Harborside is fighting that. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We're talking about the business of marijuana and particularly medical marijuana in California. And we want to take your calls. You can call us anonymously if necessary. What do you think the future of the marijuana industry should be? And if you're a consumer, a grower, a user, a distributor of marijuana, medical or otherwise, what is your experience negotiating these conflicting state and federal laws? If you live near a dispensary or a pot farm, how does that affect you and your neighborhood? And how do you think law enforcement should respond to the marijuana business? Is marijuana the answer, is medical marijuana the answer, or should we end federal prohibition of pot? You can give us a call at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. I'm going to give out that number one more time. Especially would like to hear from users of medical marijuana. 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. Or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Our guests today are Mark Schaefer. He's the director of the National Geographic documentary Marijuana Gold Rush about the growth of the medical marijuana industry nationally and internationally. And Joe Elford is chief counsel with Americans for Safe Access. And let me get back to you for a minute here, Mark. Can you talk about what was happening at the local level, how local communities, particularly let's focus here on Mendocino and the Ordinance 9.31.
Yeah.
Tell us how Mendocino kind of had found a way to deal with state law.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mendocino is a major growing region for marijuana in the whole country. And marijuana is a major part of that region's economy. So locally, they came up with an idea. Actually, it was pushed by a combination of a county supervisor and a marijuana grower, Matt Cohen, to develop an ordinance, 9.31, that would permit the cultivation of up to 99 plants of marijuana for medical use under strict regulation. And the sheriff's department would go around and walk around and check farms and make sure they're in compliance. And they would get these little zip ties that said Mendocino County Sheriff on them, ripped around.
And the Mendocino County Sheriff said that this actually helped him deal with illegal drug trafficking, that he was in favor of this law, right?
Yes, he wanted to focus his resources on illegal growers growing for the commercial non-medical market. He wanted to find a way to create a socially productive industry in his community, an industry that would feed a legal industry, that is, of medical marijuana. And that's what the 9.31 program was designed to do.
And so what's happened now to both Matthew Cohen and this law?
Well, much to the dismay of the people in Mendocino and certainly Matt Cohen, was raided in October. His farm, all the plants on his farm were destroyed and confiscated. And the 9.31 program is in a bit of limbo. They are not taking new applications for 2012. There was a decision out of Southern California that Joe knows all about, I'm sure, called the PAC decision.
Unfortunately so.
Yes, that has put into doubt whether localities have the right to actually regulate the way the 9.31 program does. And so the general counsel in Mendocino has put on hold that program. So it's uncertain what's going to happen going forward. And Matt Cohen's pretty much out of business, unfortunately. And the people up there, both in law enforcement and in the growing community, have seen this as a real message, as a shot across the bow from the federal government that says, we're not going to tolerate this kind of idea. The idea that you're going to build a legal space for marijuana is very, very threatening, I think, to the traditionalists who much prefer a black and white world in which bad guys grow marijuana and we bust the bad guys. Building a little space in there, even a relatively large space in there, is very, very threatening to the status quo. And so it draws the attention of the federal government.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. You can join our conversation at 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. We have a full line, but lines will be opening in just a moment. Let's go to Gary in Berkeley. Welcome to Your Call, Gary. Do we have Gary? Well, in the absence of... Do we have Gary? Yeah.
Hello?
Hi,
Hello?
Gary. Welcome to Your Call.
Thank you very much for having this most important topic. I think it's fair to say that we're dealing with fascism here. Fascism is like where they want to tell you what to think or tell you what to say. Well, it goes all the way down into telling you what to ingest, whether eating it or smoking it or whatever. We're dealing with fascism, and the federal government law, based on lies, is oppressing everybody. And I'll say this, Thomas Jefferson tells us that he, quote, enjoyed smoking the leaves of the hemp plant, unquote. And he grew it all over the place. As a matter of fact, all of the clothing which was issued to the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War was by edict of the Continental Congress to be spun from homemade hemp. Okay? So I'll just say this. If Thomas Jefferson could get out of the grave today... Oh, by the way, I am a medical marijuana patient. I take it for epilepsy and for depression. If Jefferson could get out of the grave today, he would grab Eric Holder and he would string him up like one of these roast ducks that we see dangling in the window of a Chinatown deli.
Gary, can I ask you, since you are a medical marijuana patient, how are these crackdowns affecting you?
Well, they're putting fear into me in that the places that I go to, I'm wondering how long are they going to be there before the fascists shut them down? You know, one here, one there. Pretty soon they're going to get around to mine if they're going to keep doing this. They have to stop this. And it's time the people in this election year realize that whoever removes this federal government law based on lies, they're going to be reelected until forever. They'll get such a huge voter reward. You know, they'll be, you know, what am I trying to say?
They'll be rewarded by the voters.
Will.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. We really appreciate your 2 cents on this. And Joe, can I ask you about legislation that's coming down for this next ballot? Voters did reject kind of narrowly Proposition 19, which would have led to legalization in California. They rejected that in 2010. What is new legislation coming up?
Well, that remains to be seen. We're kind of in that interim period where they're trying to gather signatures for initiatives.
Competing initiatives, right?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Competing initiatives.
Yeah, well, there are various types of initiatives. You may well see a medical marijuana initiative, which will allow the state to regulate exactly what dispensaries look like and what their best practices ought to be. You probably will see competing legalization initiatives, which will allow for the legalization of marijuana outright. I mean, it's going to be a couple of months, I think, till we'll see exactly what's going to be on the ballot. But I'm sure you will see various types of marijuana legalization types of initiatives in the ballot on in November.
And let's go to another caller before the break. Anne in Santa Cruz, welcome to Your Call.
Hi. Well, I do believe that hemp is one of the best plants on the planet, and I am very sorry that Jerry Brown chose not to do anything at this point. But I was harmed, basically, by somebody because of the secrecy of the marijuana. He came to me and was looking for a place to live, and I have a rental property. And he said he had a medical marijuana license. So I basically, unfortunately, didn't grill him enough, and I just assumed he would have a couple plants for his own use. Well, he extended what that meant for own use as much as he could. And what he did basically is start a growing operation. And since I didn't know what he was spending on electricity, I did see him bringing in some supplies and things like that and taking some things out in his backpack. But he actually, I said to him, I have PG&E coming in to check everybody's heaters. And he said to me, oh, no, I've turned mine off. And that was in the middle of the winter. And I said, no, let me come and see what's going on there. And I was pretty horrified, but he said he was totally legal. He had barricaded up all the walls, the windows, so that he had, you know, a very airtight growing operation. And he said it was totally legal, but he had thousands of little baby plants growing in the allotted area in his bedroom.
And Anne, did you get a notice from the feds to evict him? Or
no, I took it on myself to evict him because he was making a mildew industry in my property. And he also, it was a situation where people could have come in and, you know, gone to the wrong unit and they could have harmed another tenant. And he was very angry at me. But, you know, there's a big difference when you are, you know, not telling the property owner what you're really going to be doing. And two plants is not the same thing as thousands of plants. And he was probably transplanting them somewhere else. So well,
and stay on the line there, Anne. I'd like to get a response. Joe, what would Anne's responsibility be in this as the landlord?
Well, I don't know if she has any responsibility of her own. I mean, she obviously would have a responsibility to the other tenants. I mean,
could federal prosecutors go after the property owner?
Yes, they could.
It's possible, yes.
Absolutely.
If she knows that there's someone who's cultivating a significant amount of marijuana, there would be a risk of forfeiture, and as the feds have recently pointed out, a risk of even criminal prosecution. So
absolutely,
if she knows it's going on, there are potential federal repercussions. At the same time, this may or may not be legal under state law. I mean, there are rules about, like, I couldn't just start a whole T-shirt business for my apartment because it's not a commercial use. So there are rules that deal with that. So,
all
I mean,
of that.
If you're talking about the quantity of plants that Anne mentioned, you've got other issues that aren't even just marijuana specific.
And that's Joe Elford. He's chief counsel with Americans for Safe Access. We're also joined by Mark Schaefer. He's the director of the National Geographic documentary Marijuana Gold Rush. And that's what we're talking about today on Your Call, the business of marijuana and how the federal crackdown will affect state and local laws on the legal use of pot. And we want to take your calls. What do you think the future of the marijuana industry should be? And if, like Anne, you're a consumer, a grower, a real estate manager, or a distributor of marijuana, medical or otherwise, what's your experience negotiating state and federal laws? If you live near a dispensary or a pot farm, how does that affect you and your neighborhood? And how do you think law enforcement at any level, local, state, federal, should respond to the marijuana business? You can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Should we end federal prohibition of cannabis altogether? Call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or an email to feedback@yourcallradio. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Your Call on KALW, San Francisco. If you haven't visited KALW.org lately, it's changed a lot. The redesign is aimed at making it easier for you to find the information you want and for you to be able to share the programming you value on KALW with people you know. However, it is still a work in progress, and we need your help to make it better. So please check out the new KALW.org and see what you think, and send us any suggestions you have for improvements. And thank you.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. And tomorrow, we're going to be talking about how the candidacy of Ron Paul has changed the game and the conversation for progressives, liberals, and conservatives alike. Friday, of course, is our media roundtable, the day we speak with journalists about the week's news coverage. And today we're talking about the business of marijuana and exploring the legal limbo of medical marijuana and legalization laws. With us, we have Joe Elford. He's chief counsel with Americans for Safe Access. And we're also talking with Mark Schaefer. He's the director of the National Geographic documentary, Marijuana Gold Rush, which is about the growth of the medical marijuana industry. Let's hear a clip from that documentary. This is Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan.
I think the important part, some cultivator is going to take that.
Medical marijuana in California is legal. It's legal in 15 states in the U.S., so it is a legitimate product. But what we're doing is trying to provide a quality and safe product and to lose the negative aspects that are involved. Much of the marijuana in California has been brought in from Mexico. It's been a major factor in the Mexican gangs. I'd rather have a legitimate union business paying its taxes than helping the Mexican cartel.
And that's Mayor Gene Kwan speaking in the documentary Marijuana Gold Rush. We have the filmmaker here with us, Mark Schaefer. So how does the crackdown on legal growing, use, and distribution affect the black market? That seems to be what Mayor Kwan is referring to.
Well, if you can't grow a legitimate crop, obviously, people are going to get it someplace else. Before we had medical marijuana laws, people got their marijuana from other places. In states where medical marijuana laws don't exist today, people get their marijuana. It's not like California has a lot of marijuana users and Iowa does not. So if you remove those businesses, somebody will step in and fill that void. I thought what Kwan is getting at there is that for cities, in her view, in Oakland's view more generally, it makes more sense to try to create a regulated, safe industry for marijuana distribution. And they were trying actually to create a marijuana cultivation industry that the federal government stepped in and stopped, than to somehow expect that to just happen randomly out there in some organized, safe way. As the caller before indicated, what you're going to get are people growing, setting up grow rooms in basements, attics, rentals. And that's what goes
mobile
on
mobile trucks.
Today. Yeah, absolutely. Just like in our film, there's a mobile truck, a grow-up situation going on out there. There's a bigger question, of course, which is that if you only create access to marijuana for medical reasons, you're not going to remove the problem because so many people, in fact, I would venture to say, the vast, vast, vast majority of people use marijuana for a non-medical reasons.
For recreational use.
Well, that's the word we use, yes. For reasons other than what the government would define as medical. And so if you strictly put down restrictions on people's access based on medical use, which California did not do, it created a Wild West situation by defining medical use as pretty much being alive. So anybody can get a card and go get medical marijuana. But other states have put much more severe restrictions down. Well, obviously, you're still going to have a giant black market for marijuana because all the people who can't get a medical card are going to still want to use it and are still going to use it. That's a problem that the medical laws don't address.
And Joe, can you talk to us, can you contrast a little bit about the different state laws? And I'm wondering if anybody is kind of getting it right. People often point to Colorado. So what's the difference between what Colorado has done and California?
Well, the difference between what Colorado done in California is Colorado currently has a much greater top-down approach. In Colorado, you've actually got the state having greater involvement in both cultivation and, or more specifically, in dispensing marijuana, whereas in California, it's left a lot more to the people on the ground. There aren't very clear state laws about what dispensaries can do and how the marijuana is to be cultivated and ultimately dispensed. That may change. I mean, you may well see an initiative this coming year that will help make it a little bit more of a top-down approach within the state. And that's one of the primary differences. But I would like to say something about what Mark said, which is absolutely accurate, which is this federal crackdown is actually going to increase the black market and drive things underground by the feds busting people like Matt Cohen, who's growing above board, who has zip ties affixed to his plants. You're able to ensure that these plants are grown in Mendocino, are going to be distributed in California. They're not coming from the Mexican cartel. But by busting someone like Matt Cohen, that type of legitimate California supply is going to dry up, and that's going to drive it underground and in some cases to folks outside of California.
And let's go to another caller who's got a very relevant story to this. Robert in Mill Valley, welcome to your call.
Yes, I'm actually Carmel Valley, but yeah, I just got recently, I got released from federal prison for being a marijuana cultivator. I was growing it medicinally. I've been an activist since the 90s. I worked on Proposition 215. In fact, I got over 10,000 signatures for that initiative, strongly for all uses of cannabis, recreational and medicinal. However, you know, the current situation, like we've been hearing from Mr. Schaefer, you know, about the fact that it's forcing things underground. There's a huge safety issue going on. It's dangerous. You're around a lot of money or value of money. People want to rob you. There's no protection from the government. There's no regulation of industry like the woman called before. It's destroying people's houses. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues going on for the subject. I basically was providing plants for people that couldn't otherwise produce quality clone stock. And it's a very important aspect of the cannabis industry. And frankly, it's really safe to use recreationally compared to alcohol and tobacco. So, you know, and this goes all the way back to the Henry Ensinger days, and, you know, it's a big issue going on. And obviously there's a bunch of initiatives this year in California and maybe other states as well to change the laws in California as far as regards to marijuana use.
Robert, do you want to tell us how you were arrested and why?
Yes, I made an investment in a timber property. The corporation that owned the property that I was buying land from was under investigation for money laundering. And then I got indicted by the federal grand jury. They served search warrants. It was called Operation Southern Sweep. They raided about 30 odd locations in southern Humboldt and northern Mendocino. One of the places they went to was my house. I had a clone operation that was legitimate. I had plants. I had over 70 different varieties. I was doing breeding trials with high CBD strains, which is more of a medicinal strain that doesn't get you as high. It's more for certain types of ailments. And I was doing a lot of experimenting, and it requires large amounts of plants. You know, so a lot of this research needs to be done, you know. I did a year and a day in federal prison. They said I was a marijuana addict. The federal government paid $6,000 a month for me to go to residential drug treatment, which I did not need. However, you know, I could be a drug counselor now because I got so much out of it. But I don't use marijuana today. I used to. I would use it for medicine. I have serious back injury from a car accident. And trauma issues from childhood where, you know, I got my first medical marijuana prescription in 1999 by Todd McGurria, who's no longer with us. But, I strongly support any kind of legislation to change the laws. I mean, this is something, this should really be a big part of the presidential debate.
Well, right, thank now. You so much, Robert. Let's get a response. Mark Schaefer, you wanted to respond to Robert.
I just wanted to point out one thing that is often missed in this conversation. It's a very large industry, as we found when we did our film. But there's a piece of the industry that's not often recognized as such, which is that there's an industry in enforcing the law. A lot of money gets sloshed around from the federal government in the way of grants and otherwise to localities to enforce marijuana laws. Property is seized by people who have marijuana farms or marijuana operations. And so there's real money to be made by governments who want to crack down on marijuana and who, to local law enforcement departments who are short on funds looking for ways to hold on to police officers and others.
They can use federal money to do that.
There is federal grants available for marijuana purposes. In fact, ironically, in our film, there's a moment at which Sheriff Randy Johnson is addressing a group of marijuana farmers, one of the more striking...
This is in Mendocino.
Yeah, situations. You know, as you have a sheriff standing there in front of a crowd full of sort of very ordinary-looking people who are all marijuana growers, or most of them, about the 9.31 program. And Mendocino's going through very severe budget cuts. And seven sheriffs are on the lines for layoffs. And Randy is telling the people that if we grow this program and the fees that come in per person who registers with the 9.31 program, we can save the seven sheriffs. Just think what that would do for the marijuana legalization movement if marijuana growers are saving sheriffs in Mendocino, right? It's Alice in Wonderland kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we're talking about the business of marijuana, both the legal and black market trade, and a piece of that is how much law enforcement grows up around this and that there's a lot of money in that as well. There's another email related to this from Jim. He says, can your guests speak to the portion at the beginning of the show where criminal organizations are involved in this industry? To what extent are criminal organizations involved and which ones? And I suppose he's referring to Mexican drug cartels and in-state black market traders. Joe, Mark?
I think this whole idea of this criminal element is very overblown, especially with Mexican cartels. I mean, when you look at the genesis of marijuana prohibition in the United States, it dates back to the early 1900s, where there was high unemployment, and it was believed that by passing laws that would ban marijuana, it would drive a lot of Mexican immigrants out of that state because many Mexican immigrants used marijuana, and the idea is by banning it, it would make life so miserable that they would just go elsewhere. And so there's this kind of anti-Latino sentiment that has permeated throughout all of this, and I think that's what you're seeing today with this focus on Mexican cartels. To the extent that the feds or anyone else wants to actually drive out the cartel element, it would be wise to regulate it as opposed to banning it and cracking down on it.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with Joe that if you have a black market, that's where you're going to find a criminal element, like the Mexican cartels, to the extent they may exist. I asked repeatedly for evidence that there were Mexican cartels, because you hear that all the time when you go up into the growing regions. And it's important to point out that the Mendocino County Sheriff, which, you know, is involved in this legalization program, is also very aggressively involved in cracking down on large illegal grows. Every summer they go out as part of a multi-jurisdictional group, and they march into the national forests in hunting for large illegal grows to chop down and destroy. So it's not a pro-marijuana department, okay? But nobody could give me any real evidence. Nobody had any real evidence that, say, the Sinaloa cartel or the Zetas in Mexico were directly involved in marijuana cultivation. The federal government likes to say that something on the order of 80% of the profits of the Mexican cartels comes from marijuana.
In California?
In the nation, in terms of their revenue in mm-hmm. Mexico. Now, most of that marijuana, I assume, is sold in the United States. But where they get that information from, I honestly don't know. And yeah. I'm skeptical because everything around marijuana is politically loaded. And there's a lot on both sides. There's real mythologies that are tossed at one another back and forth, and reason has fallen out of the conversation, unfortunately.
Reason has fallen out of the conversation. That's Mark Schaefer. He's the director of the National Geographic documentary Marijuana Gold Rush, which is about the growth of the medical marijuana industry, both here in California and nationally and internationally, which we'll talk about in a moment. Joe Elford is a chief counsel with Americans for Safe Access, and you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're joined now by Richard Lee of Oaksterdam University in downtown Oakland. Welcome to Your Call, Richard.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I'm wondering how the recent federal crackdown is affecting Oaksterdam and your business.
Well, we've seen some drop in enrollment, but we've had lots of other competition now. It's great to see all the other schools opening up. And so that in general, I think things are going our way.
And You know, Proposition 19, which you were a main backer of in California, was narrowly defeated in 2010. How do you read that vote? Do you think that means that Californians don't want legalization of marijuana?
Well, it only failed by 3%, so I think it doesn't show a big mandate for keeping it illegal when almost half of the voters voted to make it legal. There's always problems with an initiative because you're not just repealing prohibition, you're trying to put in regulations, and that's difficult to do. It's hard to start regulating, especially with the federal government, with it being illegal federally. One of the reasons Prop 19 was written the way it was to get around federal law. So we do see it as Prop 19 was a big step toward legalization, and we saw the poll numbers nationally jump 4% last year for legalization. So I think it's Prop 19 helped legitimize the argument.
And can you tell our listeners, for those who are not familiar with Oaksterdam, what do you do?
Oaksterdam University is a trade school for the cannabis industry, but more importantly, we're a political entity to encourage and help people get involved in changing the laws, because that is the most important thing. We say that the business is part of the politics, not the other way around. The politics is the most important thing, but we have to grow and distribute cannabis in a safe and responsible manner to show that it can be done. And what we've seen in California is that we're already paying, the State Board of Equalization estimates around $100 million a year in sales tax. And so this is a step toward the industry becoming legal by generating taxes and good jobs.
And a lot of the folks interviewed in Marijuana Gold Rush had said that they actually, as dispensary owners and operators and as growers, wanted tougher, tighter regulation. Is that how you feel as well?
No, I just think we need regulations, but I'm not sure about exactly what you mean by tougher or tighter. I do believe we need to legalize it for all adults because, as you were talking about before, medical-only marijuana is real difficult when all the doctors realize how safe it is and are willing to allow everyone to use it. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we say medical marijuana. We're saying we're letting the doctors decide, and the doctors have decided that it should be legal like alcohol. I mean, and we have now the California Medical Association came out for legalization last October.
And just today, the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, is reporting that they've done studies to show that smoking marijuana is relatively safe. Let me ask you, Mark Schaefer, about the international trade, because we've mostly focused on California and the U.S. And I'm just wondering if you could tell us about this company, GW Pharmaceuticals, in London.
Sure. A big surprise to me that the largest legal marijuana company in the world is in California, Mendocino or Oakland or otherwise. It's outside of London, England. It's a company called GW Pharmaceuticals. It's a mainstream pharmaceutical company whose entire research line and its sole product at the moment, a drug called Sativex, is made from extracts of the marijuana plant. So we went over to London. We went to England. We visited their operation. We walked around with this very prim and proper British botanist as he showed us warehouses full of marijuana plants. And we saw what they're doing, and they're making a spray. They have a marketing agreement with Bayer Corporation. So on their box, you see the Bayer logo.
This is the German company.
This is a British company, GW Pharmaceuticals, run by a man named Jeffrey Guy. And they've sent their product through federal drug approval agencies in Europe and in Canada. They're in phase 3 trials here in the United States, and it's basically a pure liquid extract of two marijuana strains that they grow. I mean, I want to be very clear with the audience. All this is two specific marijuana plants that they have taken and grown very consistently and then boiled down essentially into a liquid that is sprayed into the mouth. It's high in CBD, which is one of the chemicals in marijuana that people are very excited about its medical use. It's non-psychoactive, so it doesn't make you high. And so they've tamped down how high you get from using their medication. It's government approved for very limited reasons. And one interesting angle about GW Pharmaceuticals, I mean, you can see it two ways. You could see it as a evidence that marijuana is, in fact, a medicine, something the federal government continues to reject out of hand, right? On the other hand, you could also see it as a threat to the medical marijuana movement, because if there's a pharmaceutical industry product like Sativex, it could be, and that's approved for use in the United States, what would stop the federal government from saying, none of the operations like Harborside or no herbal use of the plant is permitted. If you need medical marijuana, you have to go out and buy something called Sativex for a lot of money.
From right? Big Pharma.
From a pharmaceutical company, from a Bayer.
Let's get to some more callers because we're running out of time here. Nick in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to, I work at a relatively large dispensary in San Francisco, and I just wanted to bring some attention to the actual human toll on from the federal crackdown. You know, we have a staff of around 50 people that every single day have to come in and face the threat of federal intervention at any given time, even though we're following all the rules. This weighs very heavily on everyone, and it's very evident in everyone's behavior throughout the day that, you know, there's this extra added stress. It's like a monkey sitting on everybody's back. And I also just wanted to point out that the gold rush concept, the idea that everyone is rushing in and making a ton of money, isn't really true. No one's making a lot of money from medical cannabis, period. You know, I mean, people are making a living, but no one's making millions and millions of dollars and hitting the jackpot and making tons of money. That's just not happening.
Thank you so much, Nick. Let's go to Douglas in San Francisco. Hi, Doug.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome to your call.
Thank you for having the program. It's a great program and the great speakers you have and the great topic. I'm a relatively new consumer, and I just really was concerned about the moral implications of smoking marijuana in its illegal state, because there was metaphorical blood on my conscience, and I did not want that. So when it became legalized, I went and got my medicinal marijuana card, and honestly, mostly for recreational use. There are some legitimate medical uses that I've encountered as benefits, but I do think this plant is a pretty powerful medicine, and I think that the illegality of it is part of the problem is how we're tackling it, making it illegal. You keep it in the shadows by being illegal, and you can't talk about its positives or its negatives in a candid light. And so having informed consumers using the substance when they're driving or whenever isn't as likely to happen when it's in its illegal state. And it, by bringing it into light, you know, you decriminalize it, you take out all of the human toll.
That's right.
It just seems to me that that's the right way to go.
Thank you so much, Douglas. Let's go to one more caller, Susan in San Francisco. Welcome to your call, and if you could be relatively brief, we're running out of time.
Yeah, I'm a patient in my 60s for over 10 years, and although I'm fine with my paperwork and Prop 19 would have helped me, I want to make a case for veterans. They're the new younger demographic coming in, replacing the older, more frail AIDS and cancer patients. Mm. And they really need this medicine. And it's really about the plant, not about these silly extracts that the pharmaceutical industry wants to put on us. And I think I want to make a case for legalizing on a national level, because there's some very good doctors and outreach coordinators in the VA system, but they're hamstrung right now by this being illegal on a federal level.
Thank you.
Also, I pay tax as a patient, and I'd love to not pay tax and have the recreational users chip in on the tax.
Right. Thank you so much, Susan. So let me get final thoughts from both Joe and Mark. We're out of time here, so just give me sort of 45 seconds to respond to some of this, the implications of this for real people. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I very much appreciate the call from Nick and the others as well. They really have focused on the individual. You had an early call talking about individual freedom, the right to control the course of one's medical treatment. But more importantly, I know a lot of this show has been about the industry of medical marijuana, but unfortunately what I specialize in is the misery of medical marijuana, or more particularly the misery of the federal crackdown on medical marijuana patients. And these people have families, and they're being sent to prison, and you've got thousands of other folks who are worried about the same happening to them, and that's just a very unfortunate attribute of this federal crackdown on medical marijuana.
Thank you so much, Joe. Mark, final thoughts?
I guess I would second what Douglas had to say, which is that I wish we could have an honest conversation about the plant, and we haven't had that in 70 years. We've had distortion from the prohibitionist side met with counter-distortion from the legalization side, and, you know, I would like, the plant exists, people use it, in obviously large numbers, and I'd like to see society gain some benefit from that rather than to continue to bang our head against the wall.
And that's Mark Schaefer. He's the director of the National Geographic documentary Marijuana Gold Rush. We'll put a link to how you can see that film on our website. We were also joined by Joe Elford. He's chief counsel with Americans for Safe Access. That is a national member-based organization of patients, medical professionals, scientists, and concerned citizens promoting safe and legal access to cannabis. And we'll put a link to web resources at our new website, yourcallradio.org. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks to everyone who called and emailed, and I apologize that we couldn't get to all of your calls or answer all of the questions that we have about this plant. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, we'll take a look at the increasingly popular GOP candidate, Ron Paul. Why is his message resonating with so many young people? What's the draw for liberals? We'll explore his ideology and ideas in depth. What do you want to know about Ron Paul? And how does his candidacy change the game and the conversation for progressives, liberals, and conservatives alike? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.